Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Battle Mountain by Scott Carrier. Thank you for listening.
I went out there to ski, but the skiing was lousy. The fifth winter of drought in the driest state in the country. I went up Ruby Dome, Wheeler, Ibapah, and the Arc Dome. They were each beautiful and unique. I had amazing views of the Great Basin, but there was, at the best, only about 18 inches of snow. And it was always unconsolidated sugar with an inch of ice crust. So skiing down was treacherous. It was all about suffering, which is okay. You feel good when it's over. But in the process, I broke a pole, ruined my boots, tore the bottoms of my skis to shreds, and damn near killed my dog, who was always breaking through and having a hard time. So after a while, I gave up skiing and just did a lot of driving around looking at the mountains, scouting out places for a better year. It's so big, so open out there. You don't drive, you sail the basin and range. You feel like a ship at sea, an ocean of sagebrush. When I saw someone, which was a rare occasion, I'd stop and talk to them, ask directions, or just see what they were doing.
My name's Ed Grusevich, and we're at Squaw Valley Ranch, Galconda. Hot, 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 hot. These are dehorners. These are emasculators for cutting their nuts off. This is where you change their mind from ass to grass.
Oh! Well, did you grow up on a ranch? How'd you learn how to be a cowboy?
Oh, because it's easy.
Is it? That's a joke, right?
No, it is easy. I mean, you don't have a time clock to punch. You don't have to feed yourself. You don't have to worry about all kinds. There's a lot of things you don't have to. It's like just like living at home as a kid or being in the service. A lot of things are taken care of for you. You don't have to worry about certain things.
Why do you do this instead? Because you could do something else and make more money.
Well, this is fun. I don't need money. We all get the same thing in the end anyway. A lot of good, lots of toys do you when you're dead, so you just as well have fun. And this is fun.
Money, you don't stick around here. What do you do?
Go get drunk, spend it, get rid of it. Cowboys with money are too independent. If you got money, you can quit.
How long does it take to spend it, to spend your money?
Oh, $100 a day easily. That's if you don't gamble. Don't take me very long.
Hey.
Yes, it was lonely, very lonely. My husband might be at camp and not come in, you know, maybe once a week or just to get supplies. It was not only lonely, it was scary, put it that way. It was. And a lot of times I'm surrounded, you know, the cowboys come in. There's only two now. And they all sit around, and that's all I ever hear. It's cowboy. Well, anything. Any story, like, They have a lot of excitement around here because things happen. You know, the horses are a little bit rank and they might saddle up and one might go bucking off. And they think it's great.
Well, what?
But they, I think, the way I have cowboys figured, most of the ones I have met are very nice people. And they like the freedom of being a cowboy. Every morning, they get on their horse and they ride out into the great beyond. They're adventuresome. I think a lot of it was resentment because at first, and I didn't maybe let myself like it, but I found out if your husband enjoys his work and he's happy, then you're happy. And my husband likes what he's doing. So we've been basically happy. But I think if I hadn't resigned myself to that, it would have been different. But no, I like it now. I really do. I look out my windows. I have a beautiful view. And I just like it now.
Nevada is pockmarked with ghost towns. You see signs on the highway that say historic this and historic that. And what they mean is that in the 1850s or in the 1890s, 10,000 white men lived there for 3 years and then vanished. This is Nevada's history. Boom and bust. A million holes in the ground. Solitary miners out wandering around the desert looking to get rich, or just out looking because they don't want or know how to do anything else. I met one day, an old-timer. I was trying to find a way up to Granite Peak in the Wasatch Range. I drove up his road and stopped at his trailer. His name was Harry Nylene, and he must have been close to 80 years old.
If it hadn't been for greedy persons, greedy ones, why, I would be a multi-millionaire. And that's no lie. Right up here, there's at least $20 billion worth of gold alone, just the gold values in this property. I've had this property on just about on the verge of going into production, and some greedy person had throw the monkey wrench in it just to get it for themselves. And if they wouldn't have been so greedy, they would have made millions.
Well, I don't understand. I mean, if someone comes along and says, I'll buy you out of this mine,
well,
I'll give you the money, why don't you take them up? Why don't you say, this is my price, and you can have it?
I'm past that age of being able to sell it. For this reason, they look at me and they say, oh, well, we just wait a while. He's going to die and we'll have it for nothing.
Huh. Is that true? They will have it for nothing?
That's the way the big companies are.
Do you think if your health was better, you could make a lot of money here?
Huh?
Do you think if your health was better, you could make a lot of money?
It's beyond me as far as that goes. I'm just waiting for some young person that comes along that believes in the United States, and then turn it over to him.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd sell it or just give it
to him? I'll just give it to him.
Really?
Why, sure.
There's a man you'll hear about most every place you go. And he never was much bothered by the process of the law. I hired out the Diamond Joe boys. I did offer him my hand. He gave me a string of horses so they could not stand. I like to start the death bar. He did mistreat me so. Never saved a dollar in the pay of Diamond Joe. Well, I tried three times to quit him both, but he did argue so that I'm still punching cattle in the pay of Diamond Joe. And when I'm called up yonder and it comes my time to go, give my blankets to my buddies and give the fleas Diamond Joe.
I tried for 2 days to get into the Jarbeach Mountains, but it was just impossible. The roads weren't plowed, and my station wagon wouldn't make it. So I was on my way back south towards Elko. I came up over a hill, and all of a sudden the highway was clogged with cars and trucks. All the people were up on the hillside. It was some kind of race. Snowmobiles were dragging canoes and boats up the hill, and then people would get into the boats and bomb down to the bottom.
Okay, what the idea is, we got the annual first annual winter canoe race sponsored by the Bar Association out of Elko, Nevada here. And we're just out to have a little fun and represent the bars around here. We got three classes. We got a canoe class, that's 40 inches wide in a regular canoe. And we got a yacht class, which is anything wider than the canoe. And we got an open class where they can run down on anything. A car hood was used and whatever they can make up on it. So, let me know when you're ready.
Ready? Yep. Yeah, go on! That's not getting any younger!
It was completely crazy. The course went straight down the hill. It was fairly steep, and there wasn't anywhere to stop at the bottom. It just ended in a ditch by the side of the road. Luckily, most of the canoes couldn't get any speed going, and they'd stop before they even made it halfway. But there was one small wooden skiff, painted red, white, and blue, named Desert Storm, that went down incredibly fast, with 5 men inside. The one in the stern trying to steer with sideboards. But he overcompensated, and the boat fishtailed back and forth and then flipped into the air, flinging the men out like marbles, and then it landed on a couple of them and broke into 2 pieces. The next boat down was a canoe that also quickly picked up a lot of speed, ran off the course, and headed straight towards 4 spectators. 3 of them reacted quickly and jumped out of the way. But the 4th, a young woman, kind of froze, and the canoe caught her at her shins, tossed her into a high somersault, and I could see that her legs were like noodles. Both of them were broken, probably all 4 bones. The crowd just stood there eating hot dogs, like, well, who's next? In Nevada, you can go pretty much wherever you want. 80% of the land is public domain, mostly BLM, Bureau of Land Management, some Forest Service, a little Park Service, but the sky, the airspace, belongs to the military. 70% is controlled by the Air Force and the Navy. Miners and ranchers I met told me that the jets were all over in the Gulf, but there were jets everywhere, flashing night flights over the Jarbeach Wilderness, flying low, going east up Squaw Valley to the Great Salt Lake Desert, playing tag and chase in the Monitor Basin. a six-plume contrail from a B-52, 20,000 feet over Walker Lake. I met a rancher, Cecil Garland, who lived just south of the Wendover bombing range. He said the war in the Gulf was giving him and his neighbors the first peace and quiet they'd had in years. For now, no more low-flying aircraft.
And by low-flying, I mean F-16s and F-whatever would come literally over our trees and just swoop down over our homes and our cattle, and they'd be 150 feet above the ground. And this was frequent. And for many years, we got no relief from that. And they would, you know, use us for radar targets when we were traveling our roads. They flew low over our schoolhouse. They would fly low over your tractor when you're working in your fields here. The human system is not prepared to have a low-flying jet just simply fly over you. You go into shock for seconds. Your system does. And so I'm repelled by the whole thing.
I drove into Elko late on a Sunday night and parked by an alley off Main Street. I was looking down on the floor of the car for my wallet or something, and when I looked up again, there was a cop car behind me with its lights flashing. I looked around, and right next to my car, on the sidewalk, there was a big guy with a 6-inch gash on his face and a long cut down his forearm. He was bleeding bad and swaying back and forth like he was about to go unconscious. And then I looked in front of him, and there were two women walking away in separate directions, both crying, saying, "No, oh no." And then there was one other man, a really big guy, over 6 feet tall and at least 300 pounds, standing back by a pickup next to a brick wall. The cops got out of their car and came at him, both with pistols and flashlights, saying, "Drop it. Put it down. Throw it down on the ground in front of you." He dropped something. I guess it was a small knife. The cops said, "Put your hands up over your head. Now, do it." But the guy put his arms out towards them and said, "Come on, come on," like he was going to fight. Then the police called him by name. They said, "Jimmy, you don't understand. We've got guns. Now put your hands up. Now." And while this standoff was going on, the first guy, the bloody guy, walked right in between them and staggered off down the alley with the cops shouting, "Hold it. Stop right there. Don't go any farther." But he just kept walking, like he'd never heard a word. Elko has a population of 20,000 people. It has 5 stoplights. That's a lot for this part of Nevada. I went into the closest bar to have a beer, and it was Jell-O wrestling night.
All right! Okay, are you ready for tonight's big tag team match? It's the best 2 out of 3 falls, no time limit. Here's your current champions, all the way from the Big Apple, New York City. It's Charlie and Tuesday, 10 for Charlie's Angels, a combined weight of 218 pounds.
As far as Jell-O's basically it's a wrestling thing, you know, you just wrestle. And as far as oil goes, when I go on the road, or Jell-O, we do a dance routine first. We're bidded. They bid for us to be our coaches, although they're not allowed to touch us. But we do. We have coaches that sit there on the, you know, for so much money, they'll sit up there and they'll wipe us off and or spray us down, whichever it is. And I'm real damn proud of myself. I bought me a 7-bedroom, 5-bath home. And I'm a single woman. And that's a hell of an accomplishment, you know, because most people don't think that ever could happen. We all depend on you men to take care of us. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's all it is. It's like, you know, it's about time I made something out of my life besides nothing.
Wait a second. We need a ruling from the commissioner here. Girls, ladies. Wait a minute. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. There's a pin. Let's hear for the rose on Tuesday's ass. Come on.
I drove into Austin, a little town in the middle of the state. It was nighttime, and there was nothing open except a bar named The Bar. I went in, and there were three men playing pool with the woman bartender. I thought these men must be miners, because each of them was covered with dust. It took about 3 minutes before the woman came over and gave me a beer. Then one of the men came over, and I started to talk to him about the fishing around there. But he was telling me stories, and I could tell he didn't know what he was talking about. So I changed the subject to jets. I said, driving into town tonight, about 20 miles east of here, I was watching 5 or 6 fighter jets chase each other. You see a lot of them around here? And he said, yeah, every day, all day. They come in from all over the country. This town's one of their targets. I said, what's that like, being a target? He said, oh, I don't know. You get to where you appreciate it. I said, appreciate it? He said, yeah. You still got your freedom, don't you? And I said, I don't know. He said, what? I said, I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about when I was watching the jets. I don't know whether they make me more free or not. And this guy stood there leaning on his pool cue, looking me straight in the eye, and said, the only person who'd say a thing like that is either against our boys over there, or he's one of them crazy bastards. Then his friends called him over to shoot. He shot and came back and said, you ever been hit over the head with the butt of a rifle? You ever had a bayonet stabbed in your back? I said, I was just thinking that maybe our technology makes us more like slaves, and that maybe you were a miner and would understand what I'm saying. He said, I'm for these people, right here. I'm for this place, right here. I said, what do you mean? And he came up to me, put his face right up next to mine and said, you're gonna get your ass kicked, and I'm gonna kick it, and I'm gonna win. I looked back at him and said, you misunderstand my intentions. I didn't come in here to get into a fight, and it doesn't matter to me that you can kick my ass. I was just trying to have a conversation. His friends called him back to shoot, and he did. But after that, he ignored me. They all ignored me. And after a while, I left. Drove out of town, thinking, why am I such a coward? Why didn't I stand up for what I was saying? I'd let myself become intimidated, and I felt ashamed. So I turned around and went back into town, walked up to the door of the bar, and stood there for a second thinking, okay, you go in there, it's not going to be an argument, it's going to be a fight, and they all have pool cues, and you're going to get your face kicked in. And I thought, what the hell? I've got a right to get beat up for what I believe. So I went in, but they were all gone. There was just the bartender there, talking to an older man. I broke down in Battle Mountain, a small town named after a small massacre of Shoshone Indians. The sun was setting, and the light on the buildings was like yellowed cellophane. I went into the Owl Club, a casino, bar, and restaurant, the social mecca of the town and the surrounding 90,000 square miles. In the bar, there were 5 big-screen TVs, all tuned to CNN. Fighter jets were taxiing on a runway in Saudi Arabia. Nobody was watching. They were all old, smoky sclerotics, slouched over their drinks, or punching video poker games. In the coffee shop, they had a counter. On one side was a man crashed out asleep. On the other was a Paiute Indian with a beard and mustache, sitting over a hamburger and French fries, waving his arms in wild and quick motions, shouting instructions in a language I couldn't understand, like he was directing something big and slightly out of control, maybe an elephant. I bought a newspaper, and on the front page, there was a story about a man who'd shot his wife in the head and then buried her in her green Chevy Nova with his backhoe. A few days later, he called to report her missing, and when the police came out to ask questions, they noticed the big mound of dirt and the rear end of the car sticking out. He confessed everything except why he did it, and then he killed himself in jail with the plastic bag over his head. The reporter interviewed a few friends of the couple, and they all said how sorry they felt for him, the man, like his wife had it coming to her. Around midnight, I was standing outside at the four-way stop, watching the lights on the Owl Club sign. They were the kind that move. They traveled down a line and around the corner, and I guess I was zoning out, hypnotized. Then I realized that the lights weren't really moving, that they were just individual bulbs blinking on and off in sync to give the illusion of movement. And I thought, this is like life, my life, all these people's lives, and the life of this lousy town. We all just blink on and then off. The movement, the progression, the magic is just an illusion. There is no culture, no history. The lights just blink on and then they blink off. And I was going to feel sad about this. I thought I should feel sad about this. But suddenly, I felt pretty good. Instead of feeling alone, a long way away from home, I realized that I was home, that I was just as much a local in Battle Mountain as anyone who'd lived there all of his life. And besides that, I had some money, and I could get whatever I wanted just for the asking. A cheeseburger, a beer, a woman, a place to sleep. I tried, and I couldn't think of anything else I wanted or needed. And suddenly, I was very happy to be here in America. This place, right here.
You just heard Battle Mountain by Scott Carrier, broadcast by New American Radio.